This time I'm really excited, like really excited. Ron is the only guy I know that's louder than me. that's pretty amazing. And I just want to welcome Ron, and I just wanted to give you a little bit of a history. Like, Ron has been very inspirational in my life and a lot of lives of people in recovery. And he's helped many, many people throughout his years. I won't give you all of his history, but he's been around the rooms for a really, really long time in AA and now in CA. And keep an open mind, you know, to what he's saying. Don't shut yourself off. Keep an open mind. And I know when I first heard Ron, I couldn't stand the guy, right? He was obnoxious. Making me nuts. But the thing is that my voices in my head was so loud that God put him in my life, because his voice was like 100 times louder than that one in here. So it worked for me, right? It worked for me. But like I said, I love Ron. He's been around the rooms for a long time. He saved me many times when I was struggling. Always picks up the phone. You know, is always helping new people, men and women, through the steps. And I'm just like really excited to welcome Ron.
Right on. Thanks, Averia. Right on. Hi, everybody. I'm Ron, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm an addict.
Hi, Ron.
I'd like to welcome anybody new, anybody coming back. Welcome. And, I would like to thank the convention for having me here. Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, just to share the love and share the knowledge of the big book and of the 12 steps. It just deeply just touches my heart every time I get a chance to talk or share about the 12 steps. So a little bit about myself is my sobriety date, clean and sober date, is November the 3rd, 1988. So I have 25 years, and I'll be turning 26 this year on November the 3rd. Thanks, you guys. So I just want to just get in really shortly about who I am and why am I talking here. And just so you guys can relate a little bit, is I started drinking and doing drugs when I was like 13 years old. Like, that was my life. I started the waterfront as a Vancouver longshoreman when I was 13 years old. And I was just turning 14. And I started the waterfront, and back then, years ago, there was a lot of drinking, and there was a lot of drugs, and that was just an everyday thing when I just started the waterfront. So this is what my life was like at the very beginning. Well, it just kept going that way, and it just continued that way until near the time I almost died, right? And I just couldn't stop, right? And I didn't know anything about any fellowships. I didn't. And, you know, I know this is Cocaine Anonymous, but, you know, oh my God, I could have built a bridge from Vancouver to North Vancouver full of coke. And I talk about that sometimes. I did so much. You know, it was just unbelievable. And I don't have a whole lot of money, but I remember spending like $10,000 in one night, right? Big pile of coke. I'm like, that's a great idea. And you'd think that would be enough. But it's not. And I wish it was, but it wasn't. And this is what my life was like. I was done like the dying can get. And it came to a point where I couldn't stop. I couldn't control it. I couldn't stop. And I needed help. So I got the help. And I came to the fellowship. And I got a friend. And that first friend I had was a sponsor. And all this guy did for me was he loved me. That's all he did. He really didn't tell me anything. He picked me up and he took me to meetings. He picked me up. He took me to jails. He picked me up. I went to hospitals. He picked me up. We went to some sort of central office. Sorry. A central office to help others. Right? That's all what was done for me. So nobody really told me what to do. But the problem with that is when I got here and I was 24 and I'm like 50 now, oh my God. So I've been here a long time, is I wanted to stay clean and sober. I wanted to, but I didn't know how. How do you do that? How do you come to the fellowship? and stay clean and sober. How do you do that? Thank God I had somebody who just walked with me. Right? But again, that wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough. I was still crazy. I was in the fellowship. I was in the rooms. And I was dying in the rooms. And I know how many people die in these rooms. The book tells me, and it's a lot. It's probably about 95% who actually will end up going back out. And the people who will stay here are the people who are doing the work. So I found out really early that it's important to get into this work. And I found out really early. So I had a couple of months clean and sober. And I thought, I know what I'm going to do. Is I'm going to sponsor people at 2 months clean and sober. 2 months. I thought this is a brilliant idea. Right? Because people are staying, you know, clean by doing this work. So I had 2 months and I'm going around and I'm sponsoring people. And it worked. But the problem was I didn't know what I was talking about. Right? So I would say, hey, look. Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get into the book. And I'll get right back to you. And that's what I would do. And nothing will get you faster reading this book and doing the program than sponsoring somebody. Or you can almost die. And so it's either fear or it's sponsoring somebody. And I had both of them happening in my life. I can remember my sponsor talking to me at the very beginning. And he said, I'm driving down the street. I still remember. And he's passed away now. And we're driving down the street and he says, Ron, how much fear is running through your life right now? I said, oh my God, 99.9% fear is running my life. And he said, well, why don't you ask me? I said, okay, how much fear is running through your life? He says, maybe 5%. I'm like, what? 5%? You live life with only 5% fear? I'm like, how is that even possible? But it is. And I'm going to show you exactly how and what I was taught. And what happened was, is I got involved in this big book. And I was in the rooms dying just like everybody else. And I needed help. I was in these rooms dying, clean and sober, but I was dying. I was doing wrong things. I was negative. I was still right on Ron, but I was dying. So how do you live life without dying and feeling that desperation and that uselessness and that no hope, no life, nothing, and you wake up and you're clean and sober, but you want to die? So I got involved in the big book. And I ended up doing all these steps. So what I did right away is I did all the treatment centers way. The Idiot's Guide, I went through all the treatment centers. I did all their steps. I did, what else did I do? I did a whole bunch of steps. Big book, downtown, there was a big book study. Did that, didn't like it. I did as much as I could, and I'm still not understanding how this all pieces together. Nobody helped me, right? So I'm here stuck in the fellowship, and I was stuck, and I was hurting. I was going to die. You know, I wasn't going to go back out. I was going to die, and I felt like I wanted to die. That was just it. So then I heard other things. I heard like Joe and Charlie, and I don't know if you guys heard of Joe and Charlie, but they actually helped change my life. They did, and they talk about the 12 steps. And I like that. I like that. But when I heard them, I didn't relate to the step 4. And I couldn't relate to the step 4 because I know more about step 4 than what they're saying. And I'm going around the fellowships, and I'm like, how do you do step 4? How do you do step? I'm taught guys with 25 years to 40 years to 2 years. I'm so open-minded. I have to be, because my life depends on it. So then I started my own big book study on a Monday night at the Alano Club, and I put on my own big book study, and I started reading the book, I started studying the book. And what I came up with is sort of like an outline from the big book, but I took a bunch of stuff and I kind of put it together so I could fast track people through the steps. And why I did this is I'm not taking away anything from the big book. I'm not. But I want to actually help save your life because I've gone through the steps with people. I've gone through steps many, many times, reading word per word of this book, and they die. And it takes a long time. I'm telling you, it takes a long time to read this book and to understand it. And they're dying. And there's many people who have died. I'm like, something has to be done here. Maybe we can just give them some sort of, quick way of doing this so they kind of understand. And that's why I'm here today. Okay, and all the stuff I'm telling you is from the big book. Probably 99% of it is from the big book. I'm going to tell you the pages. I'm going to tell you everything. Okay, so we're going to go through it really quickly. But it's going to be very crystal clear. I don't want people leaving here today who doesn't know what an alcoholic is. I don't want anybody leaving here not knowing what the insanity is. I don't want anybody leaving here with any fear after today. So if you got fear in your life, you're going to love this talk, because you shouldn't. You shouldn't actually have fear, and you're going to know how to deal with it through the 12 steps. So I'm going to start right away. So we have this disease, it's alcoholism, it's drug addiction, and that's the main thing. We have a disease, okay, and they have symptoms. Everybody knows these symptoms. And if you don't, I'm going to explain it to you. It's the mental obsession of the mind. Something happens to my mind, and it makes a good idea to drink or do drugs. And it starts with my mind. And that's the first symptom. The second symptom is the allergy. So once I actually take a drink or I take some drugs or, coke, something happens that normally doesn't happen with people. Right? Something happens to me. And it all starts from the very beginning again. And I can't stop and I can't control it. Okay, so we all kind of know about, we have these two symptoms. But something actually happens before the symptoms actually happen. And Dr. Silkworth talks about it. And Dr. Silkworth was Bill Wilson's doctor. And something happens before my mind even thinks about using. Something happens. And it's called the spiritual malady. And what happens is Dr. Silkworth, he talks about that irritable, restless discontent. I'm irritable, restless discontent. So if you're irritable, restless discontent, it means you're in spiritual pain. And why I'm talking about the spiritual malady is before the symptoms is because Dr. Silkworth outlines it and he says it basically clear. We can't tell the difference between the truth and the false. I'm going to explain that later. On page 52, it talks about the spiritual malady, exactly what it is. But the spiritual malady happens before I even think about using. So what happens is I'm living this life, and what I'm going to explain is how do we live this? So what happens is it's the very first thing that's going to happen to us is I'm irritable, restless, discontent. That's your very first warning light. That's your very first warning. If you're irritable, restless, discontent, it means you might be in spiritual pain. And if you're in spiritual pain, the very first solution that I've ever used in my life was to use. So if I'm irritable, restless, discontent, I don't know what I'm going to do. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick up something to change the way that I feel. Right? I'm going to go right to the solution. And the solution has always been, I'm going to pick up something to change the way that I feel. Because I'm in so much pain right now. And nobody understands how I feel. And I'm going to change that. And I'm going to go straight to the solution I've always used for my whole life. If it's a drink, if it's a drug, if it's you're through. Because that's my solution. So what we're going to do, hopefully today, is we're going to change that. So it all starts from the spiritual malady. I'm irritable, restless, discontent. I'm now thinking, I might use something. And I do. And then after I do that, this craving happens. I can't stop and control it at that point. And it's funny, this controlling stuff. Because, I'm going to get to the insanity, to what the real insanity is. I'm going to explain that later. But it all starts from the very beginning. It goes through that, the spiritual malady. It goes from the thinking. And then it goes to the actual using. And it's just one vicious circle. And that's what happens. So what I've done is I put on many workshops of this. So where I'm going to start is I'm going to start off with Dr. Silkworth talking about men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so inclusive that, while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after time, differentiate the truth from the false. To them, the alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, discontented. So what is he talking about there? He said that we can't tell the difference between the truth and the false. Dr. Silkworth, he says, like, oh, after a while, we can't tell the difference between the truth and false. So this is where we're going here. The truth has always been inside me, and it's been in my heart. And the lies have always been with me also, and it's in my head. So if anybody here, how many people know that drugs is the problem here? Does anybody think drugs was the problem? Alcohol and drugs was the problem? Hands. Anybody? Yeah? And does anybody see it that way today? Yeah, it's your solution. That's right. And the thing is, it wasn't ever the problem. The drugs was never the problem. What the problem is my mind would get me there. Right? So my mind would convince me, if it's telling me the truth or not, that it would get me to that drug. And I couldn't stop, couldn't control it, and it was my solution. Right? So that's a big problem when I got... So the main problem centers in our mind. Right? So let's get to the first step. And the first step is we admitted we're powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Powerless. Whenever you hear powerless, it means lacking power in the big book. I don't know if you know that, but it does. Powerless means lacking power. And we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. We were lacking power. And that our lives became unmanageable. And that unmanageability is that spiritual malady. It's not that I drank too much and I passed out and stuff like this. It's that my mind continued to tell me that to use when it wasn't okay to use. Right? So let's go to even page 11 in the big book. Here was something at work in the human heart which had done the impossible. Bill Wilson's sitting across the table with Abby, who his sponsor is. He's sitting across the table, Bill Wilson and Abby, and he knocked on the door. They sat down, and Bill Wilson's drinking, and Abby comes to Bill that day, and this is what Bill Wilson said. And he said this on page 11. Here was something at work in the human heart which had done the impossible. And he's true. He's right. He knew by seeing his friend across the table, Abby had a couple of months sober at that time. And he knew that something in the human heart that had done the impossible. And this is where we're going here. We're going with this heart. We're going with love. Right? And it's all about love. It really is. But he knew that. Bill Wilson knew that. And he mentions it on page 11. On page 14, faith without works is dead. They mention that. They actually mention it three times in the big book. Faith without works is dead. So I don't know if you've heard, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. I don't agree with it. I don't agree if you come up to me right now and just hit me or something, I'm supposed to accept that. I'm not going to accept it. So if anybody thinks acceptance is the answer to all their problems, I don't agree with it. But it tells me three times in the big book, faith without works is dead. So that's telling me faith with loving actions will change my life. And I believe that too. And that's what I get from it. Page 16 in the big book, it says faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us or you perish. Faith has to work in and through us 24 hours a day. I need to have this faith. I need to listen to my heart. I need to do this. I need to follow what the book says. Not what right on wrong says, but let's go with what the book says. It says right here, page 20, modern drinkers have little trouble giving up liquor entirely if they have a good reason for it. They can take it or leave it alone. Okay, so they told me normal drinkers or drug users can take it or leave it alone. Okay, don't do it. Like, honestly, don't do it. What are you doing? Oh, I can control this. I actually don't have a problem. Really? Really? You don't have a problem? Nope. Don't do it then. But an alcoholic and an addict can't. They can't. bed. They go, oh, I can do without this. I don't have these symptoms. I don't have that allergy thing happening. I can control it. I've heard this 100 times. 1,000 times I've heard it. Oh, I can control it. I can control it. I can go out there and I can drink once every Friday night. Well, if you can control it, why are you out there drinking or using drugs? Even once. Once. Can you control it? Not you, but can you control it? Right? If you can, you can take it or leave it alone. I go with what the book says. Let's not go by what Ron says. Let's go by what the book says. It says you can take it. It says right here, they can take it or leave it alone. You can't do it even once. Because if you knew and if you lived an honest way of life, if you were honest about this, and that's what step one is I need to tell my innermost self that I'm, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict. I shouldn't be doing this even once. Okay, so the real alcoholic may start off as a moderate drinker, somebody who can control it then. But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. So once he starts to drink, something happens. Something happens that doesn't happen in my sister. My sister has one drink a year and she doesn't like it. It doesn't. My brother's a little different. He's actually a heavy drinker. And he'll have like 6, but he'll stop. And he won't have it for 6 months down the road. But when he drinks, he has like maybe 6. That's my starting point. That's where I'm starting. Come on. That's my starting point. See, he can control it. I can't. He can. I can't. Let's see. Page 22. Once he takes any alcohol or drugs, we're talking about either, people. Takes any alcohol or drugs, whatever in his system, something happens, both bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. So what happens is once I start, I can't control it. And I would think that I could, but I can't. And something happens that makes it virtually impossible for you to stop. So here's a good question for you. If you're using right now, can I help you? Yes or no? Absolutely not. Have at it. And what I tell people is have at it, but don't die. So I know the exact time I can help you. I know the exact time I can help you. Don't you answer this. Or are you? So when can I help you? If you're using right now, when can I help you? Because I need to know crystal clear. When can I help you and help change your life? When can I help you? Any guesses? No. 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 No, because they're using.
When you make a decision.
No. Right. Who said that? Who said that? My sponsee. The next day. And I've seen it. I give them my number and I go like, look, don't die. Just don't die, please. Stay at home. Do the drugs. Enjoy it. Because you're not going to be doing it tomorrow, I hope. And the next day happens. Everybody gets clean and sober the next day. That's when I want you. And that's when I want you. And the book talks about that the brain needs to be cleared before he is approached. And it does make sense. I can't help you. I'm sorry. I can maybe sit with you for the night so you don't end up maybe dying. But I need to know, when can I help that addict? And it's the next day when he wakes up in the morning. That's when I want you. And I've already seen it work. I've seen people who are ready to jump off of bridges. And they don't jump off of the bridge, thank God. And they get a hold of me the next day. And I walk with them. I help them through this work. And they live amazing lives by doing this work. So what I tell people is, why don't we just do the work and get the results from doing the work? That's it. I don't want people thinking. Because if you're thinking, it's your main problem. It's your thinking. I don't want people thinking doing the steps. So if anybody's doing step 4 or any other step, and if you're thinking, you're in the wrong place. I don't want you thinking. Because if you're thinking, you're not thinking about the work. You're thinking about everything else. And I don't want you thinking, because if you're thinking, you're in the problem. Oh, so here we go. Page 23, the main problem of the alcoholic, the addict. centers in his mind rather than his body. Let's get that straight. What's the main problem? Centers in my mind rather than in my body. So what's the main problem? Is my thinking. So the main problem in my entire life was my thinking got me to this drug and that's the main problem. Is my main thinking. Okay, so what's the main problem? My thinking. We don't want you to think. And you're all saying, oh yeah, okay. I know the steps. I know what you're saying, those people who have done the steps. You know what you're saying? You're saying, he's wrong. Because in the big book, it says, at this point, we want you to think at this point, but that's step 11. So let's not go there. And I'm going to get to that. But right now, up to step 9 and 10, there's no thinking. We don't want you to think. And do you know why we don't want you to think? Because you're only thinking about you. That's the only thing you're thinking about is, oh, you wouldn't believe what that girl did to me. You wouldn't believe what that guy did to me. You wouldn't believe it. Yeah, I can't wait to tell you. Right? And I hear this all the time. I get a phone call. Oh, da-da-da-da-da-da. But what are they really telling me? They're telling me the problem. Right? So step one is the problem. We need to let people know step one's the problem. And what's the problem? My thinking. Okay, page 23. The central fact of our life today is absolute certainly that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. I love that. Let me read that again. The central fact of our life today is absolute certainly that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me where God is, not who God is. I'm not telling you who God is. I'm telling you where God is from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It tells me my Creator has just entered into what? It says a central fact of our life today is absolute certainly that our Creator has entered into our hearts that lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. So that's telling me where God is. But the problem is my mind has controlled my whole life. And it's gotten me into a lot of trouble by just thinking. Right? But now they're telling me there's actually a new solution here. It's always been within me. But what's gotten in the problem of my heart has been what? Me listening to my heart. What's the problem? Thinking. That's right. And my thinking is the main problem. But they're telling me where God is. And God's always been within me. Truth, false. So that's what Dr. Silkworth was telling us. He says you can't tell the difference between the truth and the false. They're talking about the truth has always been within us. And it's been within our heart. But so is the lying in the head by thinking. So I've always had the problem and solution within me the whole time. But what has controlled and ran my whole entire life? What's my thinking? I go right to the, I thought solution, but it was a problem. My whole life I've been going to the problem. Oh, hey, you know, and then when I hear people saying anything, do you know where they are? They're in the problem. Telling us hear this all the time. People who sponsor people, that's all we hear is the problem. They're in their heads. Oh, Kelly, you wouldn't believe what happened. Amanda, you wouldn't believe what happened. Severio, but they're in the problem. And we're going to get to the solution and stuff. So, page 25. One was to go on to the bitter end, blocking out the consciousness out of our intolerable situation as best as we could. And the other was to accept spiritual help. I like it. Page 29, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. And I kind of missed this, but at the very beginning, they told you why they wrote this big book. And they wrote it for two reasons. Joe's going to love this. They wrote the big book for two reasons, and here's the one reason. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. That's one reason why they wrote the book, to show you how we have recovered. And we have recovered from a hopelessly state of mind and body. So once we have done this work, you could pretty much say you have recovered. Because I'm not the same person. I don't think the same way. I don't even act the same way. And if I do, I have a program to live by today. And the second reason is, they wrote the big book, is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself. But we're coming up to that. Okay. Page 30. Oh, no, no, no. You've heard, and I know we've all heard it, the insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes, but that's not how it is. Right? So before we even can get to step two, step one pretty much tells us what the insanity is. And they tell us right here, here's the scariest part of the big book. This is by far the scariest part. Okay, and this is the insanity that they're talking about. So they, you know, came to believe that a power greater than itself could restore its sanity. Right? That's step two. But what's the insanity? Here's the insanity. This is the insanity. The idea. I don't even need to go any further than that, but I'm going to. That's the insanity. The idea. If you got an idea, you know you're headed the wrong way. But that's the insanity they're talking about. But let me read it. It says, the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession to every abnormal drinker, drugger. Control it. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. So what's the insanity? The insanity is the idea. Hey, I wasn't that bad. I can control this. I don't have a problem with this. Wrong. Right? So what's the insanity? The insanity is the idea that somehow, someday, we can control this and enjoy it just like everybody else. But you can't. So that's the insanity. So, can you believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity? Well, you need to know what the insanity is. And the insanity is the idea that somehow, someday, we will control it and enjoy it. It's a great obsession. Obsession. I don't see anything else. It's a great obsession of every alcoholic and addict. Page 30. We had to learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves, that we're alcoholics and addicts. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we're like other people have, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. I'm not like other people. If you're an alcoholic and if you're an addict, and if you can't control this, I think the biggest part of step one is that self-honesty. Am I an alcoholic? And I'm going to tell you what that one is before we can even get to step two. Am I an alcoholic? Can I control this? So we need to know to our innermost selves. That's inside. They're not telling you, let's just think that I am. They're telling you deep down inside, to your innermost selves, are you an alcoholic? Are you an addict? Okay, and the delusion that we're like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. Page 33, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Once an addict, always an addict. If you're an addict or an alcoholic, but isn't it funny that insanity is going to creep in there? I know I'm an addict. I know that. But what's going to happen? The mind. That idea that somehow, you know what, I wasn't that bad. That's the insanity. It's crazy. So what the book is really about, it's about problems and solutions. So we'll keep going because I know I'll try to get this through as fast as I can. There must be no reservation of any kind, no lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol or drugs. This is really great. This is on page 33. There must be no reservation of any kind. Do you know I do steps with anybody and everyone? I don't care if it's your mother. I don't care if it's your dad, your kid, your grandma, your grandpa. I don't care who you are. If you want to do the steps, I'm going to do them with you. And there must be no reservation of any kind. But do you know what I hear? And I don't know if Kelly hears it. Happy Kelly from Kelowna. I love her. But when you're working with women, I hear this from women, but I never hear from guys. And there must be no reservation of any kind. And do you know what they say to me? There is a reservation. And there's only one reservation with a lot of women and only women. And do you know what the reservation is? Getting married. Can I get married? And can I just have like just one drink? I get that. And I've taken the steps through many people. And that's the one thing I hear from women. Oh, like, just one drink for my wedding? You women are brought up, and it's nothing bad. I think it's fantastic. You're brought up with different beliefs than we are. And I hear that. And I hear it through the step fives. And I hear it when I work with you. And you guys are brought up, you girls are brought up differently. You dream about that wedding, and some of you, and you dream about the white dress and that picket fence and that drink. Just one little toke or snort. Right? No, you can't. Right? You can't. Right? No little one, none. Because if you can control it, you wouldn't be doing it. People who don't have a problem can stop. There's no question about it. You know what I've done is I've gone even into bars with people. And they go, I can control it. I'm like, right on, I'm going to have a pop and stuff. And you know what I do? Don't ever do this to an alcoholic or to an addict. But can I just mention this? I'll just mention it. Is I take the drink away from them. But you know when I do it? I take it away when they're not ready for it. And I just like, oh, I take it away. And you never want to take away somebody's drugs. I remember, you don't. And they flip out. I can remember somebody took away my keys because we're just doing a bunch of lines and shit like this, right, all night. And he took away my keys. Oh, you're not driving. I was going to kill this guy. No. I was going to kill him. I'm being honest with you. I'm being honest. I was going to kill him. He had no other choice. I was going to kill my best friend. My best friend. I was going to kill him. We grew up together. We worked together. I was going to kill him. And no. I was going to kill him. He gave me the keys. Okay, so we hear powerless, and powerless is lacking power. So when I hear in the big book power, what are they talking about? They're talking about God. Okay, so I know what powerless is I'm lacking listening to God. It's powerless. I'm not listening to God anymore. I'm lacking power. But power means God. So let's hear what it says. Page 34, lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. We lost the power. We lost listening to God. We lost that. We are not listening to heart anymore. We're listening to this. I know what I'm doing, right? I'm not listening to my heart and God anymore. That's within me. I'm listening to my head. And out I go again. And next thing you know, I'm in some crack house or snorting. And, oh, God, I don't even want to talk about it. It's so horrible. But lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. You know, unbelievable. Page 39, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on basis of self-knowledge. Self-knowledge? Listen, this is kind of funny. Will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on basis of self-knowledge. What self-knowledge? That's thinking. You don't even want to go anywhere near thinking to help you stay clean. Nothing. If you're thinking, you're in the problem. Because what's the main problem? Is our thinking. I don't want anything to do. Self-knowledge won't help us. You're right, it won't. Because it's not going to come from your mind. That's the problem. It's coming from your heart. It's coming from prayer. It's coming from God. Okay. The subtle insanity which precedes that first drink. Page 40. Well, we know what the insanity is, remember? The idea. Right? The idea. That's the insanity. Oh, I got an idea. Right? I can control this. The idea comes from my head. Doesn't come from my heart. It comes, right? Right? That craziness. And it comes from your mind. That insanity. Okay, so isn't this funny? Page 42. I saw that willpower, right? And self-knowledge, willpower, thinking, and self-knowledge, more thinking, would not help in these strange mental blank spots. They're right. The big book's telling you, don't think. Don't think. You're in the problem. Okay, so page 43, this will end step one. Once more, the alcoholic has at certain times no effective mental defense. Mental defense, thinking, against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor an other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. So what I do at this point is I tell people, Do you have a sponsor? Yes or no? And do you use your sponsor? Yes, I phone my sponsor. Every time I'm going to phone my sponsor. I'm like, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. We only have one defense here, and it's God. So if you're a sponsor, and if you're saying to your sponsee, hey, I want you to phone me every time before you use. What? And what I tell people, hey, if you're even thinking about using, phone me up. I might want to join you. I've never had that day, but phone me, right? I'm kind of making this fun. Like, what are you using without me? Give me a call, right? Call me. Come on. I'm not going to use with you, but call me. But that's not going to help because, the only defense we have is God, and God's within us. It tells me it's in my heart. And it's in prayer. I'm going to get to that. And a sponsor's not going to save my life if my phone's cut off. Right? How can I get a hold of Kelly? My phone died. Right? I need to have that connection with God. I need a sponsor. I got a sponsor, actually, too. And he lives in Mexico, and I was just in Mexico a few months ago. And he's just a great guy. My sponsor's just a great guy that I just talk to and I love. That's it. He is not my, like, lifeline to staying clean and sober. He's not. What is my lifeline?
God.
Right. And it tells me right here, his defense must come from a higher power. So you only have one defense. You got one, and it's God. Oh, yeah. Oh, jeez. Oh, look. I love napkins today. Oh, my God. Okay, so step one.
Yeah.
Step one for me is the main problem is my thinking. And let's just review step one. The main problem is my thinking. We don't want you thinking. What's the main problem? Is my thinking. My thinking got me here. Getting high, partying, everything. And I've done it wrong. And I always thought it was my solution. But it's not my solution. It's the problem. So let's get that crystal clear. Okay, and that I got to be honest. And hey, Hector, it's nice that you showed up. Good. Another sponsee. So the main problem is my thinking. Okay, that's step one. But we can't even get to step two yet until we finish off step one. And at the beginning of step two, and here's step two in the big book. It says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And we know what the insanity is. The insanity is the idea. But could restore us to sanity. So we get to page 44 and we open up step two. And this is what the big book says on page 44. It says, when you honestly want to and you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when you're drinking you have little control over the amount that you take, you're probably an alcoholic. You may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So what they're telling you is this is where we stop doing the steps. And I, believe me, I've gone to AA, CA, I've even gone to Al-Anon. And I had to bring up Al-Anon just for this one case, is I've turned a lot of Al-Anoners into AA or CA or whatever. It's because this is where I have to stop. And I have to say, like, look, can you control it? Can you stop entirely? It says right here, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Or if you're drinking or drugs, you have little control over the amount that you can take. You're probably an alcoholic. You may be suffering from an illness, which only is... So this is where I have to stop and say, hey, are you an alcoholic? Are you an addict? Can you control this? And it's funny because nobody gets by me, right? And I know addicts can lie. I can do two things really good. I can use and I can lie, right? And I'm really good at it, right? We can lie, but you can't get past this part, right? Oh, yeah, I can control. No, you can't. Right? No, you can't. If you can, you would stop. Enjoy life. Enjoy life. Stop. Be merry. Have a great life. But if you can't, it means that you're suffering from an illness that only a spiritual solution could fix. Yeah, okay, I'm an addict. Okay, I'm an addict. I can't control it. I can't stop when I want to stop, and maybe I can start, but I can't stop, and oh man, it's a mess. Okay, now we can go further. And now we can start step two. So step one is the problem. Step two is actually the solution. Right? So it says, came to believe that a power, God, greater than ourselves, could restore us to sanity. And that's perfect. That's what I need in my life. So we talked about the problem being step one. Step two is actually the solution. And the rest of the steps is the solution. But step two brings us to the solution. So if you're an addict, we can go further at this point. And I, like I said, I've sat down with Al-Anon people. Well, can you help me through the steps? Sure. They find out at this point they're an addict. Right? Yeah. I can't control it. Jesus, I didn't know. And, you know, the dentist guy, he's crying. And it's like, oh, my God, right? Oh, I shouldn't mention that. Maybe he'll hear my talk one day. But I didn't mention his name. So anyway, so that's where it is. So page 44, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Page 45, I like this. We know what power is, it's God. Page 45, lack of power. That was our dilemma. What's our dilemma? Lack of God. Lack of listening to my heart. Lack of praying. Lack of having God in my life. Because what got in the way was my thinking. Right? God's here, but my head's here. Right? And I've always gone to the solution, which was my thinking, but it ended up being the problem. So now I got a new solution. It's always been within me. So lack of power, lack of listening to God. That was our dilemma. Page 45. Okay, this is the second reason why they wrote the big book. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. The main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That's the second reason. Page 47. We mean your own conception of God. That's why I said, like, I'm not here to tell you who God is, Jesus, Buddha, whatever. I don't care who you believe in. I care what the big book tells me. And it tells me it's within me. And that's what I'm going to go with. And it tells me a lot more than that, but I'm going to get into that. But we mean your own conception of God. So your own conception of God is fantastic. But I'm going with what the work says. It's in my heart. Do I believe or am I willing to believe that a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say he does believe or willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. That's page 47. Page 48. Faced with an alcoholic destruction, we soon became open-minded on spiritual matters as we tried to be with other questions. Here's the spiritual malady, page 52. And I've talked about the spiritual malady, it's that irritable, restless discontent. And what I associate that irritable, restless discontent with is if you've ever had the cops chasing you, I have, but if you haven't, I don't know. But the first thing that happens to me, it's I'm irritable, restless, discontent. They're behind me. I see them, and I know I'm in trouble. It's like, oh, no, right? And that's what I associate irritable, restless, discontent. And it's actually a warning light that we should not be irritable, restless, discontent. We shouldn't be. And if we are, we need to pray right away. We need that solution. We need to get in the heart right away, not my head. So here's the malady. And they talk about it on page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. I heard about it just out in the hallway here. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. That's a spiritual malady. And so is the irritable, restless discontent. And that's what Dr. Silkworth was talking about. Page 52. We saw others solve their problem by a simple reliance on the spirit of the universe. We had to stop doubting the power of God. It says right here, our ideas did not work. Did you guys hear that? This is from the book. It says, our ideas did not work. But it says right after that, but the God idea did. I need to have this God in my life. I need to listen to my heart. I need to trust God. I need to live this. And I need to live in the solution. God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Page 55 tells me where God is again. Page 55, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. It says right here, page 55, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. God's within us. At the back of the big book, Spiritual Experience, it says this about God. It says, our members find that they have tapped an unexpected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. I'm going to read it again. Our members find that they have tapped an unexpected inner resource, which they presently identify as their own conception of a power greater than themselves. So God's within me. So I'm going to give you an analogy. And the last time it went really good is because I put on a group like about this down at the Alano Club one day. And I gave them this analogy. Is I have a 50-inch TV and it breaks. Okay, and I do have it's just an analogy. So it breaks. My TV, it's big. I'm a guy. I love my TV. And it breaks. What's the very first thing that happens? I'm irritable, restless, discontent. I'm like, oh no, oh, here's my converter, and I'm like this, and I'm like irritable, restless, discontent, and I'm like, oh my poor TV. I'm like, oh my God. And this has a lot to do with steps one and two. And my TV's broken, and I'm irritable, restless, discontent. I'm like, oh no. So I get into my pocket, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I got money in the bank. Good. I get on my phone and I find out the TV repair place is right across the street. So I grab my TV, I take it to the repair place, they fix it. I bring it back, it works. I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic. Okay, 6 months down the road, my TV breaks. What's the very first thing that happens? Wrong. And I'm going to tell you why you're wrong, and that's what everybody says. And I'm going to tell you why. Is because I know what the solution is now. The TV, I took it across the street. See, I'm not in the problem anymore. I go right to the solution, and that's where step two helps me in my life every single day. Is I go, there is no problem. And I went around the room, and I'm like, so last time I did this, and I did it with probably 50 people, and I went around the room, and I said, you got any problems in your life? And everybody had problems in their life. And I said, okay, now ask me if I have problems. And every single person put up their hand and they had problems. Then they asked me if I have problems. And do I have problems in my life? Yes or no? Absolutely not. And why don't I? It's because I go right to the solution. My kid got into a little bit of trouble, and I shouldn't say it over tape, but my kid got into a little bit of trouble just a couple of days ago. And I have to go right to the solution. I'm not in the problem. I'm not like, Dad, you wouldn't believe what I did. No. I'm right into the solution. I phone my lawyer friend right away. I go to the solution, and this is where step two helps me. I'm not in the problem. And if you're in your head, you're in the problem. And you could use. I don't want that problem. I don't want to be in the problem up here. I want to be in the solution. So whatever is happening in my life today, there isn't problems. I go to the solution. And step two helps me that way. So that's step two. And step two is to keep an open mind. And it really is to keep an open mind, because how can my heart reach your heart if your mind's in the way? It ain't going to happen. I love Kelly. But if she says no, and if her mind says no, it's no. But what I'm saying is we need to keep an open mind in life. I need to keep an open mind. I need to be at least willing to listen to what you have to say. And when you're saying no, unless it's bad, but if it's spiritual, it's good, I should be open. And then now my heart can reach Kelly's heart, and Kelly's heart can reach my heart. And I can reach Severia, because I couldn't reach Severia before. It was impossible. She hated me. She did. And we love each other today. She's like one of my best friends today. Hey, can I tell the story? Do you mind? Okay, good. I'm going to tell Severia how I met Severia and stuff like this. She says, this girl hated me. And it has to do with the steps. And one day I got a phone call from her friend and says, hey, can you help my friend move? And I have a minivan. I said, yeah, okay. Who's your friend? And the person said, Severia. I'm like, oh, no. I said, oh, no. I said, like, she hates me. Like, why are you phoning me? Like, this girl hates me. oh, no, 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 she would like some help and stuff like this. I went and helped Saveria that day, and it changed her entire life. And the only reason that happened was through God, but it was because of that open-mindedness. I need to have an open mind. I need to be able to reach your heart. And when I work with new people, I don't go to their heads. I go to their heart. I want my heart to reach your heart. That's how we connect today, is we're joining hearts together. And it has a lot to do with step two. And from that day on, I have myself the best friend with Saveria and I. Okay, step three. So step one is the problem. Step two is the solution. Step three is kind of like just a daily solution that I need in my life every day. It says, made a decision. That's funny. A decision means choice. I don't know if you guys know that, but a decision means choice. So I'm just trying to break it down because I'm not a smart guy. I'm a longshoreman, right? I quit being a paper boy to be a longshoreman. I'm not like a counselor or anything, but I'm actually working as sort of like a counselor now for a treatment center after care program. But I'm not a smart guy. So I need to find out, what is a decision? It's a choice to turn our will and our lives. Our will and our lives. So what do they mean by that? They mean our will is my thinking and our lives is my actions. Over the care of God as we understood him. So how I kind of get it is, I've made a decision, I've made a choice to turn my thinking and my actions over to the care of God as I understood him. So that's what I do, right? All through the day, I'm like, okay, you know, I know it has to be my actions, and I know it has to come from God, and from my heart, and from prayer. It's a choice. What's your choice going to be? So we read, you know, ABCs of how it works. And then being convinced we're at step three. Page 60, this is the very first thing it says in step three. The first requirement is be convinced that any life... Okay, being convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Did you get that? The first requirement is that to be convinced, I'm convinced that any life run on self-will... Self-will, that's thinking, can hardly be a success. On that basis, we're always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. I'm a good guy. I got this planned out perfectly. Wrong. Right? Wrong. You know? I want to do things, but you know what? I have a power greater than me to check in. And you know, and what I do even today is I have to use this. I need to listen to this. I need to pray. I need to be, the closer I get to God, the closer I get to more than I could have ever imagined in this life of mine. And I didn't know that the closer I get to God, the closer I get to the truth. The closer I pray, the closer I get to God, my life is amazing. And I would have planned it different, right? I would want the Lamborghini, and I'd like, but I don't have that. But I have an amazing, amazing life. And just wait until you hear about it. We still have some time. Okay, first of all, we have to quit. Just wait. Okay, selfishness and self-centeredness, we think, is the root of all our troubles. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics, addicts, must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it'll kill us. God makes that possible. So if you're selfish and self-centered, and you're wondering how to get rid of this, God, listen to your heart. Prayer. I don't want to be that way anymore. Okay, first of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided hereafter in this realm of life, God was going to be the director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. I have that written down, well, in the big book, but I have this here really important, and I'll tell you why. Do I have to love everybody? Yes or no? Yes. Absolutely yes, because we're all children of God. We're all children of God. So do I have to love murderers and people? You know, I'm going to say, yes, I have to. But I don't have to like what some people do. I don't have to like them, but I have to love them. I have to love everybody. We're all children of God here. And I'm not changing the big book. I want to go with what the book says. And it says, we're all children of God, and we are all children of God. I have to love you. I don't have to kind of like what you say and what you do, but I have to love you. And I have found by loving everyone, it changes everything. And you're going to know that by the work that's going to come up. Okay, so I really needed to prove to myself and to others, oh, I don't know if God's inside me. I don't know if God's inside me. I don't know. And I have people questioning it. And I love people who are atheists or agnostic. And if you are, I love you. And I'd love to talk to you. Because I go with what the book says. So I needed to, prove to myself and others, what are they talking about? So it says here, it's kind of something here. Page 63, it says, more and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute in light to life. Okay, here it comes. As we felt new power flow in. What are they talking about? As we felt new power flow in. They're talking about within. If I work this work, and if I can connect to you through my heart to your heart by having an open mind, and if I'm using this within me, we felt this new power flow into us. And it says right after that, it says this, I love this, right after it says, as we felt new power flow in, page 63, as we enjoy peace of mind, now there's this talking, it's in me, I love it. As we enjoy peace of mind, we discovered that we could face life successfully. As we became conscious of his presence, we became to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and hereafter, we are reborn. Oh my God, okay. Okay, I have this within me. I am gonna be honest. I am an addict. I am going to, be honest and be open-minded that there is a solution. It's been inside me the whole time, and it's in my heart, and it's in prayer, and it's in believing in something other than my head. I don't care. It's telling me where it is. And then step three tells me, as we felt this new power flow in, we enjoyed peace of mind, we discovered that we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose fear of today, tomorrow, hereafter, we were reborn. We were at step three, and many of us said to our maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Wonderful! I love this. I'm going to use this every single day out of my life. I don't want to run the show any longer. That's the first three steps. Okay, we get to step four. Okay, now here's the good stuff, okay? So I still have 40 minutes left, thank God. Okay, so we have this list, and I know the list, and I've seen the list, and this is the list. This is the list. And it says, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, but we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady, which we've talked about the spiritual malady, is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. We listed the people, institutions, or principles to whom we were angry. So now I know what the problem is. I know what the solution is. I know what the daily solution is. I need to keep an open mind. I need to have this God, and I need that step three prayer. And now, with all of that, would it be enough to stay sober for the rest of my life, having the first three steps? And the answer is absolutely not. Because I'm going to tell you why. It's because, just because I'm close to God, and I'm going to pray every day. I am going to pray every day. And I'm going to be okay every day. But something happens. Somebody's going to piss me off. Right? Somebody's going to piss me off. I'm going to get resentful, or I'm going to be jealous, or I'm going to hate you. I hate to say it, or something really awful. And what happens is we need to deal with these things. And if we don't deal with all of this inside stuff, we are going to go back out. and it tells me that. So how do we deal with that? Well, it's telling me to list the people, places, and things. So that's what the first column is. And I have five columns going across of my very first list. There's four lists as far as I'm concerned. So we could talk about it later, but I'm going with what the book says. And I'll tell you exactly why I have what I have. But the first list is going to have five rows, five columns. And it's going to have resentment. It's going to come to cause. And it affects my. So I'm resentful at somebody. And what I have here is I'm resentful at this loud guy in the fellowship. His name's right on Ron. I hate him. He's loud, so I'm going to use my own self as a resentment. So, and this is what I do. And I wouldn't like me. If, you know, I wouldn't. When if I came in and if I was miserable, I was talking about outside. If I was miserable and I hated life and me, I would not like the positive loud guys. I wouldn't. I'd listen. You know, I wouldn't. So I'm resentful at this guy. His name's right on Ron. And it's just an example. And that's my resentment. So that's simple. That's in the first column. And what I do is I go straight down. I don't go across. So I list all the people, places, and things. Mom and dad, the guy who steals from 7-Eleven. I'm going to use him as an example too. Some guy at 7-Eleven. He steals from 7-Eleven. I'm pissed off. Because I don't, but he does. He steals, I don't. But I'm pissed off at him. And I pissed off out this loud guy right on Ron. So I'm going to give you those two examples. And then I'm going to go down the list. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go straight down. I'm going to go straight down. I'm going to go straight down. Don't go across. Okay? Go straight down. So why am I pissed off at this right on Ron? We get to the next column over. And it's the cause. So I'm resentful at Ron. Why? It's because he's a loudmouth. He's loud. And he's positive. Hate it. Ugh. If I was at the back of the room, I would hate the loud guy. Unless he maybe loved me or something, you know. It could be worse. I could be loud and I could be a really, you know, really mean. But I'm not. Or I try not to be. So anyways, I don't like this right on Ron. He's loud. I don't like the guy at 7-Eleven who stole the chocolate bar because he's stealing, and I just don't like it. I don't like people who steal anymore. I stole lots, but I don't anymore, right? I sold the chocolate bar at 7-Eleven too, but I'm pissed off at those two things. You could be pissed off at whatever you're pissed off at, parking meters, police, I don't care, mom and dad. I hear it all, and you know who we're pissed off at? Yeah, but we're pissed off at the closest people to us. People who aren't close to me doesn't even bother me. But the closest people to me, I hate them. My sister, you wouldn't believe my sister. Or my brother. Or my kids, you know. Oh, I get so... But I don't anymore because I've done this work. So I'm resentful at right on Ron. I'm resentful at the 7-Eleven guy. Why the cause is the next row is because he's loud and the guy steals. So how does that affect me? And in the big book, we just kind of like circle whatever it is. We have a few to pick from. Pride, self-esteem, personal relationship, sex relationship, security, and ambitions. So I'm pissed off at Ron because he's loud and affects my personal relationship with him. Because every time I walk into the fellowship, I see him and it pisses me off. The guy's loud. And plus the guy, doesn't ever say hi or whatever the case might be. And it affects my personal relationship and my self-esteem. I'm not like him. I kind of wish I was maybe because I remember being in the rooms and wanting everybody to love me. But you guys didn't, right? And maybe you did, but I couldn't see it at the time. And the truth is you did love me, but I didn't see it because I didn't love myself. And you have to. You have to put yourself on the step four list. You're the most important person here. And I'm going to explain why, because it's really important that you deal with you. Okay? It's really important that you are on your list. But listen to me. Put you last. Don't put you first. Because if you put you first, oh my God, you'll never get through step four. Right? Because the list would be like forever. Right? Do everybody else, but put you last, please. Okay, so I'm on my own step four list. And why am I pissed off? Because I wish, you know, I didn't use. I wish I didn't treat people this way. I wish I didn't do this. And because. And then it affects my personal relationship and my self-esteem with this right on wrong. What about the guy from 7-Eleven? You know how that affects me? It affects my personal relationship because I know him and he's a whatever. And it affects what else? Maybe just my personal relationship with him. Okay, so now that's the three rows. Now, this is something probably a lot of you guys don't know. And I don't know how they do it with all the other steps and groups who go through the big book. But what happens is you have the three columns. And at that point there, I need to start looking at me. So what I tell everybody is you need to close the door on that. And I'm going to tell you why. Because it says in step four, it says to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. So I need to close that, how I think about right on wrong and my dad and that guy at 7-Eleven. I need to close that. I need to not look at that anymore. So what I do is I fold this page over here and I go with the other two columns. And the other two columns is, you guys don't know this, but I'm going to explain it to you. And I don't think anybody knows it unless it's my sponsees. And this is exactly what the big book says. It says, and this is the fourth row, and there's five rows. This is the fourth row. Putting out the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. I'm going to ask, nobody answer on this side. Is it a mistake for me to be afraid? I'm going to explain it to you. And anyway, Severa is right. It is a mistake. And let me read it again. I'm going to read it again. And this is from the big book. Putting out the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Is it a mistake for me to be frightened? Yes. God doesn't want us frightened. If a guy has a gun to my head, am I going to be frightened? Absolutely, but I'm going to get into the rest of this. Okay, God doesn't want us frightened. And it's actually a mistake. So I'm going to ask you the same question. Putting out the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. I never ask you this question, but I'm going to ask it now. Is it a mistake to be dishonest? Yeah. Right. It's a mistake. The big book's telling me it's a mistake to be dishonest. And it's a mistake to be frightened. It's a mistake to be selfish. And it's definitely a mistake to be self-seeking. Do you know they added self-seeking? I don't know if you guys know that. But they added self-seeking in the big book only for step four. And it's really not the main defect of character. But do you know why they added? Okay, this is just a guess. Because I've heard lots of step fives. Is we are so self-seeking. I want something from everybody. And they added it only for step four because our main defects are character. It's not self-seeking. They actually take that away and they add something else. But I'm going to get to that. So what's a mistake? It's a mistake. So now let's deal with right on wrong and this guy from 7-Eleven. And I've already told you what my cause is and how it affects me. Now let's go to where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Well, if I look at right on wrong and I'm not looking at why I'm pissed off at him anymore, I'm looking at only one thing. Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And I'm selfish when it comes to right on wrong. He's loud, but so what? And it's a mistake for me to be selfish. So I need to write that down. And that's where had we been it. That's what the book says. So what about the kid from 7-Eleven? So what's my mistake in that? My mistake would be out of the four, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, I'm selfish again. Because, what am I doing looking at some kid who's stealing from 7-Eleven? So what happens is we have these mistakes. When it has to deal with resentments, I have these mistakes. And now I'm not looking at their part. That's my part. And the big book goes to actually further. And it talks about our faults. And I never knew in the big book, where do we get these defects of characters from? But we get it from my faults. So they talk about my faults, and what I've learned, this is just my own opinion, it's not in the big book, but we need to deal with my faults. So what is my faults? I'm going to explain it to you. Is I'm selfish because of right on wrong, and I'm selfish because of that kid, or from me, even from stealing 7-Eleven, or that kid. I know I'm selfish, but I want to know why. Just because I know that I'm selfish, and just because I know that I'm stealing from 7-Eleven, or that kid is, I want to know why, and that's my part. My part is my defects of character. Because I've always been reacting from what I've done. I've always been reacting from my defects. So what defects is it from right on wrong? I'm jealous of right on wrong. I'm inconsiderate of right on wrong. I'm, thanks, Amanda. Okay, so I get to our faults. I'm judging, angry, inconsiderate, and jealous of right on wrong. See, I can't help you fix something if I don't know what the problem is. But as soon as we know what the problem is, we can fix it. And so why do we have defects of character when it comes to step four? See, I need to get to the whys of it. I need to get to my fault, what my fault is. I'm judging somebody. Right? That's wrong. It's wrong. So why do I have these defects of character? Because God wants you closer to God. How can God actually help save you or fix you if you don't even know what the problem is when it comes to step four? So what I have learned is I walk through that door, and if I see right on Ron up at the podium, I'm not looking at about him any longer. I'm looking at where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. But I want to know why. And the why is my defects of character. Why? I'm inconsiderate. I need to know these things. Because once we get to 6 and 7, is I need to know what's going on here. I need to know what my defects of character are. I need to know exactly what they are by the time I get to step 6. I need to know this. So I have a whole list now of all my defects of character. That's my faults. No, I can answer it all later. So that's my faults. Okay, so that's how I deal with the resentments. And what am I really dealing with here? Is I'm dealing with our fault, my defects of character. Because I'm always reacting. I'm always reacting from what I think. We don't react from what I think. We react from what I do. We don't react from what I think. And my whole entire life, I've been reacting what I think about you. I think this about you. And I'm angry. I react, I'm angry. I react, I'm inconsiderate. I react, I'm mean. I react, I'm so self-centered. I react, and it hurts me. And it hurts me bad. And I need to fix that. And the only way you can fix it is if you know what to fix. It's no big secret here. I drank my entire my whole entire life from my reactions. And I've been reacting wrong. And I've been reacting from what I think. I've been reacting from my defects of character. And that's what sends us out. Another thing that sends us out. So that's how we deal with the resentments. Now we're going to deal with fears. And a lot of people don't know this. I'm not sure I think you're going to learn something, my friend. I hope you do. A lot of people talk about fear, and they say, oh, we deal with fears just like resentments. You don't. You don't. They deal with fears, and in the big book, I know exactly what it says. It says, we have fears that we have no resentment in connection with them. So you can't deal with fears as resentment. You can't. Because I have people coming up to me, Ron, I can't even leave my house. What can I do? What? I'm going to do a resentment part about that? No. You're going to deal with it like the big book tells you to deal with it. Say I got somebody who's threatened to shoot me or kill me or something like that. That would be a fear, but I deal with that in step 4. In the resentment part, because I'm going to have fears that deal with other people, okay? If you have fears that deal with other people and have resentment in connection with them, you do it in your first list. But I have fears that completely stricken me. Heights, intimacy, money, and I'm going to deal with a few of them. I'm going to deal with two that I hear more than anything is money and intimacy. And I'm going to tell you, fears. I could even deal with heights, too. Let's put three fears in there. Okay. Oh, and I got swimming. Okay. So, page 68. And it says, we have fears that have no resentment in connection with them. So it's page 68. And it says, we ask him to remove our fear. So, my fear is swimming. Let's just use swimming right now. My fear is swimming. And then it tells us why. Because drowning, right? So, but how do I fix that? At the bottom of the page of 68, it says, we ask him to remove our fear, and we direct our attention to what he would have us be. That's the fear solution. I need to direct my attention to what God would have me be, so let's try it. God, I have a fear of swimming. Why? It's because I don't want to drown. And I need to direct my attention what God would have me be. God, what would you have me be? Do you know what God just said to me? Swimming lessons. Yeah. And what happens is with this fear in the fear solution, and the fear solution is this. And if you're ever given the fear solution, this is what it is. To direct our attention what God would have us be. So my solution... And my solution to any fear that I have, I've done this a long time, it has to be based on action. I just can't wish it away. And even at the bottom of the page, it says, all men who have faith have courage. They trust their God. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. So that's telling me just to pray. Oh, I'm afraid to swim. It's not going to change nothing. I need some sort of action. So I have fear. Why? And solution. And what's the solution? It's to direct my attention what God would have us be. And God just said to me, take swimming lessons. And then it says right after that, it says, we asked him to remove our fear. It says, direct our attention what he would have us be, which is the solution. And right after that, it says, at once we commence to outgrow fear. So, have I outgrown fear of swimming? Absolutely, because I'm taking swimming lessons. And I know it needs to be an action. And it has to be. So I hear money. And I hear intimacy. So let's deal with the money. And I had money problems. I guess many people have money problems. And why? It's because I don't want to be broke. God, direct your attention to what you would have me be. And you know what God said to me? God says, hey, you need another job. Did it fix the money solution, yes or no? No, it didn't. And I thought it would, but it didn't. Because I still spent the same amount of money and I was still broke. So I had to, there was something missing there. And I need to save money. That's the solution. And it says, at once we commence to outgrow fear. Me having another job, I thought would have done it, but it didn't. It wasn't the solution. And God made that very perfectly clear. Because I doubled my income, but I'm spending double my income now. I needed to save money. And is that the solution? Absolutely yes. And once we commence to outgrow fear, I don't have fear of money any longer. Intimacy. Fear, why? Is because, you know, intimacy. And I'm just talking about intimacy. I'm not talking about actually anything. I'm just talking about intimacy. And I hear it. I hear it from girls and I hear it from guys. And we're different. We're definitely different. Because we know what the guys want and the girls are, yeah, right? They're not thinking the same way we are. And so we get to intimacy, and why is because it's there, and you know, so, and I have fear of it, not me, but these are the top two things I hear. So we need to direct our attention to what God would have us be, and I'm going to give you the solution to intimacy, and one is communication, and the other one is I need to be comfortable, and if you're comfortable... And I've done many step fives on this. And if you're comfortable, and if you're communicating, you can have intimacy in your life. But I need to be comfortable. And there's these actions that I need to do. I need to be comfortable, and I need to talk. And it says that once we commence to outgrow fear, I don't have a problem with that any longer. Right? And that's where I need to get to. I need to get to the solution. I need to direct my attention what God would have me be. And this is how you know you got it right, because it says that once we commence all go fear. Yeah, I didn't know that. And I come up with the solution. I live in that solution and bam, I don't have fear in my life anymore. God does not want us afraid. Okay. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Okay. Sex relationships. It says right here. It says, so we're done with the fear. Now we're on sex. And it says, God alone can judge our sex situation. And we all need to remember this. And, you know, because, yeah, we really need to know what the book, big book says. Is God alone can judge our sex situation. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. If we're not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we're quite sure to drink. We're not theorizing. These are great facts of our experience. This is so important. I mean, it's so important. And you know, I've heard everything. I've heard everything from child abuse, from sex abuse, from, oh, Jesus, you know, because I hear it, because I'm always doing, I'm doing a step five tomorrow. I'm doing a step five the next day. Like, I'm right in the middle of all of these steps all the time. And this is really, really big stuff. So what I've really done with this is I kind of went like just A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I. Because we have to answer these questions. And I usually do one per sheet, one person per sheet. And I go like, look, you know, write this down. And even the abuse that's happened in our life, sex abuse, and, you know, we need to write this down. Because I need to have that person's name there or, you know, or whatever. I need to have it there and I need to answer these questions. Where had we been selfish? Where had we been dishonest? Where had we been inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should have I done instead? Sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relationship to this test. Was it selfish or not? Now I'm going to get to the hard stuff. And I have, this is just my own rent and stuff, because I kind of go into a lot of treatment centers and I kind of help out the counselor so they can deal with a lot of the people. So I'm talking to the counselors and they're like, look, Ron, what about this and this? So I have this written down. It says sex relationship issues like child abuse, sex abuse might have happened to us, and we clearly have no faults of our own in anything we do with any of this, other than holding on to it for all these years. That's the only thing. I haven't dealt with this. And it still hurts me today. And it hurts me today. And I need to deal with this. And this is where we deal with it. So let's just say I've had abuse that's happened in my life. And let's just say the person is Fred. Is there any Freds here? No? Good. Okay. Let's just say it was Fred. And Fred and I answer all these questions. And I'm going to say no. Where had we been selfish? I wasn't selfish. Where was I dishonest? I wasn't.
What page is that on?
Page 69 to 70.
Thank you.
Right on. Where had we been dishonest? I wasn't dishonest. This happened to me, and I needed to deal with it. Where had we been inconsiderate? There is nothing. See, so showing people that they had nothing to do with this other than holding on to it, they need some sort of, what is it, healing, right? Closure. So we get down to all these questions, but it comes down to this one. What should have I done instead? And what should have I done instead is what I tell a lot of the girls and what I tell a lot of the guys is what should have I done instead? I should have phoned the police. I should have told my mom. I should have told my girlfriend. I should have told my boyfriend. I should have reported it right away. This shouldn't have happened to me. But it did. And I need to come up with what should have I done instead. And I've heard a lot of even women and guys, they go like, maybe I shouldn't have went to the bar, right? And I go, well, you can't really say that, right? Because anybody's allowed to go to a bar, right? Maybe I shouldn't have drank, and maybe you shouldn't have drank. But it happened. And we need to put down there, what should have I done instead? And that's where it becomes a little tricky, and that's where the healing has to happen, is what should have I done instead? You know, and a lot of the times is the truth. Is if I wasn't using, a lot of this stuff wouldn't have maybe happened to me, and maybe I wouldn't have done it. And I'm not using that as an excuse. I'm not. Because nobody deserves to be touched or anything happened to them that normally shouldn't happen. And it happens without the drugs and the alcohol too. And it's horrible. But I need to deal with this. And I need to know that it's not okay. And this is where it's dealt with. And I need to have this written down. What should have I done instead? And here's another really important thing here. Is a sane and sound ideal for a future sex life? There is none. This will not happen again in my entire life. This is not going to happen. I am not going to a bar. Right? I'm not. Right? Unless I'm going there to help somebody. I'm not going to a crack house any longer. I'm not. Unless I'm going there to help somebody. I'm not doing this to myself anymore. And what happens is once I go through all of these relationships, I come up with a really clear of understanding of how really messed up I was in this department. And it's very clear cut. And if you're in a relationship right now, what should have I done instead? I hear this from everybody, these four things. Here's the four main things I hear from everybody. So if you're in a relationship right now, and it's kind of good, you know, this is how it has to be. Has to be honest. You got to communicate. You got to compromise. And you got to be comfortable. And I hear that from everyone. And I just didn't bring that up. I hear it from everybody. So I had to write down those four things because I hear it from everybody. Oh, geez, Ron, I should have been honest, but I wasn't. Hey, should have compromised more, but I didn't. Right? Comfortable. This is really important, being comfortable. Because a lot of times that we put ourselves in situations, I'm not comfortable. And neither is she or neither is he. I need to be comfortable. And it's so important to have these things when I'm in a sex relationship. So we deal with the sex. Okay, here's the last list. This is the last list nobody likes doing. And maybe a lot of you don't even know about it. Okay, so I use this analogy is if I stole your cell phone, would you be resentful?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, you would be resentful. Absolutely. Now, if you stole my cell phone, would you be resentful? You stole my cell phone. It's a brand new cell phone. Would you be resentful?
No.
No, God, no. Neither would I. Sold your cell phone. But I've hurt you. And we need to deal with the hurt that I've done to people. And this is the harms. People hurt by our conduct. Page 70. We have to list the harms. We have to list the people we have hurt by our conduct and willing to straighten out the past if we can. And this is what I need to do. I need to list the people and what I did to them. See, now look, if I've hurt you, I'm not going to have a resentment towards you, but I've hurt you and I need to fix that. So I have to deal with all the resentments and bring them all over on this list, this harm list. If I've hurt you, I need to put you on this list. This is my step 8 list, but it's done in step 4. I need to have you on this list. Okay, but I've hurt people that I have no resentment. I don't have a resentment to, but I stole your cell phone and I need to fix that. Right? I hurt people. And I need to fix that. And this is what a lot of people... And this is the... Believe me, this is the list that you don't want to do. Believe me, you don't want to do this. I've heard everything. From somebody killing somebody. From somebody, like, oh, horrible stuff. I could tell you some of the things. But this house was all blocked up by plywood. And then he set it on fire. It's like, you don't want to tell people that. Right? But I hear all of this stuff. I've heard the worst of the worst. And this is where you deal with it. I've hurt you. And I just want to know here, I've hurt you, and I want to know what you have done. And what damage did I cause? And this is the last list to step 4. Okay, and that deals with step 4. Okay, so we have all of this stuff. And we go to step 5. And we sit down. And we're in for a long talk. And what I've been doing lately now is I've been doing 5, 6, 7, and 8 with everybody. And I didn't know if that's possible because The pros here, no, is that you're supposed to take an hour and you're supposed to look, review what you have done. So we're talking about actually step five now. So I pick a person, and hopefully it's somebody in the fellowship who understands, who can give you some guidance and stuff. Because if we're taking it out of the fellowship, you might as well, I don't know, say it to the wall. Right? Because, you know, people say they go to priests and stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. But what? What information are you getting back? I give a lot of feedback. So now we're sitting down and we're doing step five. And the very first thing I do is I kind of go over the work and, you know, the thinking and the solution. And you know, and I say the step three prayer and we're ready to do step five. And the first thing I do is I get them to sit down and I get them to do one, only one resentment. And I get them to deal with the resentment and not the resentment on themselves. The resentment on themselves is always done last. Remember this. It's always done last when you do a step five. Because if it's the very first thing, you're through. If you're dealing with a step five with somebody and if they talk about them right off the bat, you're through. And so are they. It is heartbreaking, it's emotional, and it's horrible. But if you start with some small ones first, and that's what I do, and I do you last. So we deal with all of, and so what we're dealing with is, look, I'm resentful at this guy, Ron. So this is what you're saying, this Ron, and I've talked about this, Ron. But what am I really talking about? My defects of character. I've always reacted this way with Ron. I've been inconsiderate. I've been mean. I've been hurt, or I've been angry. So that's what I'm hearing from your step five, is I'm hearing your wrongs, right? Is it the wrongs? Just wait. I want to get this exact. Yeah, it's our faults. I'm hearing your faults out of your step five. I want to know who it is, and I want to know who you're dealing with. Who are you talking about? Are you talking about your sister? Because I need to know all of this information to help you later when it comes to step nine. I need to know, oh, I pissed off at my sister. How long have you known your sister? Like, how long? Is she still alive? And it's really funny. You would think that I would know all of this stuff about everybody, and I do, but I don't remember any of it. So I'm a perfect person to do step five with. I can't remember none of it. And thank God I can't. So I'm sitting down, and they're dealing with their mom. They're dealing with their dad, and they're saying why they're resentful, the cause, the effects, and where their mistake is, and what their faults are. Then we deal with the fears, and they talk about the fears. And, you know, by the time, so right at the very beginning, I get them to do one. And I stop them after we do one, and I explain to them, like, look, you know why we're really doing this? Is why we're really doing this is because I've always been reacting the wrong way. I've always been reacting from what I think. And from what I think is my reaction. And what my reaction is out of my defects of character. I've always been reacting mean. I've always been reacting, and I need to hear that. And so why is because I need to know the problem so we can get to the solution again. So that's what I'm hearing in a step five. So then we go through your fears. And what happens is they continue and we do a step five. And by the time they get even a few resentment, things are changing now. They're understanding. You know what they're seeing? They're seeing the big chunks of truth about themselves. And they mention it in step four. They see the big chunks of truth about themselves. And you know what we see about ourselves? It's how inconsiderate and mean and selfish it just goes avoidance. We have hundreds, probably in the hundreds of defects of character. And I get to see the big chunks of truth about myself. And it's the first time in my life that it's not about you anymore. And here's one good thing about you and about step four, just about step five, is if I have a resentment towards you, I let everybody know when it gets to step five, is if you have a resentment towards somebody or something, does it have anything to do with them? Yes or no? Absolutely not. Not one part of that resentment has to do with you. It has to do with me and how I've always reacted wrong. I've always reacted from what I think. And I'm reacting out of a defect of character, and it's wrong. I'm reacting from my defects of characters is wrong. So then I get to the fears, I get to the sex, we cry, we laugh, we make this as enjoyable as it is, and it's not a really crying thing. It's about doing the work and getting the results from doing the work. It's not about anything else, and remember, there's no thinking involved out of all of this. There's no thinking. You do the work, you get the results from doing the work. So we listen to your step five, it's perfect. But I stay with them now. And we've talked about all of this now. And the big book says we spend an hour, and you know, we spend an hour, and we review what we've gone through. But what I do is I get them to do something at that point. And what I get them to do at that point is I get them to look at their defects of character, because we've dealt with all of this stuff. So how do I review all this? How I get somebody to review all this to get them prepared for step six is for that 1 hour, and it's not even an hour, but for 1 hour, I get them to look at all their defects of character. And you know what I say to them? I tell them, like, look, we have a lot of defects of character, and I want to know crystal clear what's going on here. And I tell them, what defects of character are hurting you the most right now? So that 1 hour, they're looking at their defects of character and they're counting. I say, hey, count. And let's just name the top 10 defects of character. And people will see that the biggest thing that's happening in your life right now is avoidance. The biggest defect of character that's happening in my life right now is I'm mean. The biggest defect of character in my life right now is I'm selfish. And I get them to review that. And now they look at that. And that's what the big book says, is that we need to swallow some big chunks of truth about themselves. So that's what I get them to do to finish off step five. So now, step six. I'll try to hurry this up. Are you guys okay just for a few more minutes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Just give me maybe 10 more minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, and it will be very crystal clear. I'll try. So step six is... it says right here, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. But what are the defects of character? I got to step six for a few years. I didn't know what they are, but I do today. They're very crystal clear. And it's the defects of character that I've done this work with. And it's the defects of character that are in my face. And this is what step six says. It says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look back at step six. We have emphasized willingness to be indispensable. We're now ready to let God remove all of these things which we have admitted are objectionable. That's good and bad. Can now take all of them, every one. If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. Step six, by the time we get to step six, says we're entirely ready to have... we know what the defects are. We know what they are. And step six, for me, step six, is thinking and knowing about a defect of character. Like, I'm starting to get pissed off because Severa's not saying hi to me. Do you get me? It's a defect of character, and I know it. That's step six. Or, you know, or I'm going to have a cigarette after this and I don't smoke, but I'm going to have a cigarette. That could be a defect. It's knowing or thinking about a defect. Okay? That's step six. I know what my defects are by the time I get to step six. Step seven is when you have nothing else left for you. And you need change in your life. And I don't want to be like this with Severa. And I don't want to smoke, or I don't want to do this. That's where step seven comes in. Step seven says, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Step seven is when I'm acting out on my defects of character and I can't stop. Right? I'm acting out. I'm mean to you all the time. And I don't want to be mean anymore. And I know I'm starting to get mean inside. And I'm going to start yelling at Kelly. And I don't want to do that anymore. Step seven comes into my life. And step seven says, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And what I do is I pray. I go, look, I don't want to be this mean person anymore. Step seven, with God's help, helps me. And how do I know what the defects of character are? Is because I want to do the opposite. So if my number one thing in my life is I'm mean and angry, is God's bringing me closer to God by doing the opposite? So through all of this work, I have these defects of character. So why do we have defects of character? Is it brings me closer to God. Because It's selfish and self-centered, and it's my will against God's. And my will is, I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm mean, and it's bringing me to the opposite of what my top defects of character are that I'm actually living in my life right now. And I need to be doing the opposite. So if I am mean, I'm praying to be nice and kind and loving, right? If I'm angry. And if I'm inconsiderate, I'm praying. I'm not looking at the defects anymore. I'm going straight to step 7. And I'm like humbly asking to remove my shortcomings. God, help me be a nicer person. Help me be a better person driving down that street. Help me be better in my relationship. I'm not in the problem. I'm in the solution. And step 7 helps me there. Step 7. When you're ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you have all of me, good and bad. That's the good. We've talked about that. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in my way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. So I'm acting out on my defects of character. I don't want to do that any longer. I want to be a good guy. Step 7 helps. Okay, so we go through that. In the work. So we're almost done here. So, and step 8, our step 8 list is done in our step 4. So we have all of these. So we're nearly done here. Give me, okay, I'll have this done by 4:15. Okay, so just give me just a couple more minutes, please. Because we started late. What's that? You might learn something. Who knows? Anyways, step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So we have the step 8 list, and I've already told you, you bring over the people I've harmed and the resentments, and I have this list, and what happens is right beside it is what damage did I cause, and we've already done that in our step 5. So that's our step 8, is just to review our list, add anybody to it, and let's go on to step 9, and then I send them home so they can finish off their step 9 and write down whatever they need to write down. Step 9 is huge. And step 9, and I told you you need to be last when we do step 5, but step 9 you need to be first. Okay, so what's happened is how can I come to you if I hate me? And how can you possibly tell somebody to go and make amends to Vince if I don't even like Vince? I love Vince, but do you get me? How can I tell somebody to go to Vince? Or I shouldn't even use Vince because everyone loves him. But anyways, how can I get somebody to go to Vince if they don't like themselves? It's almost impossible, and it's a horrible thing to ask anybody to do. So what I want to do here is I've done this work. We need to start with you, and we need to make step 9 amends to you, and you need to be first. So what does step 9 look like? Step 9 actually changes my life, and I need to make amends to me first. And what does that look like? Is what that looks like is I've done things wrong, and I want to do things right. And I know forgiveness is the biggest thing that I need in my life is forgiveness. And I didn't know what forgiveness looked like, but I know I needed it before I gave it to you or anything else. I needed forgiveness in my life, and I didn't know what that looked like. So I needed to do step 9, and I kind of didn't know what that looked like, but it had to have forgiveness. And I came with this. Is for my whole entire life, I've been reacting from what I think. And it's caused me so much harm, and I've been causing, that's the defects of character, and I need to change this. So the most important thing I needed in my life was forgiveness. And what that looks like for me today, and doing all of this work with so many people, is I need like a game plan in life with my step 9. And the biggest thing I need in my life is I need to react with love. In every situation in my life, I need to react with, Kelly, love. And I know you do because we're great friends and I love you. And I need to react with love in everything I do because I've always reacted from what I think or from being angry. I've reacted from being inconsiderate. Let's just throw that all out the window. And I need to react with, what do I need to react with? Right. And that's the biggest forgiveness that I got in my life. And then if I'm okay, and if I love me today, can I go to Vince? Absolutely I can. And I'm excited to go to Vince today and say, you know what, I love you. And you know what, I'm, you know, and now I could go to other people. So I need to react with love, and I need a game plan. And what's my game plan? It might be to hike every day. It might be going, so what I do now is I try to help the homeless today. You know, and I was a board of director for the first 10 years of the Vancouver Recovery Club. Then I volunteered at Union Gospel Mission the next 10 years, right? And now I'm helping out the homeless. But what does my life look like right now for my step 9? Helping others, reacting with love. And that's my step 9 to me. Now I can go to anyone and say that I love you, and I was wrong, and I was inconsiderate, and I was mean, and I shouldn't have done that. And I walk around in love today, and that's where step 9 helps me. Okay, step 10. Okay, we're almost, yeah, I got 7 minutes. Okay, step 10. A lot of people get step 10 confused with step 11. And step 10 is done all through the day. I hear people say, oh, I do step 10 when I wake up in the morning. Well, you don't. You do step 10 all through the day, and this is what it says. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. Okay, so this is done all through the day, and I'm just going to read this really quickly, and this is step 10, a couple of really key points. We continue to take personal inventory, and we continue to write any new mistakes as we go along. Page 84, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. Page 84, we entered the world of the Spirit. Page 84, our next function is to grow in understanding effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. I put this as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but here's 5 key things in step 10. 1, and it doesn't say 1, but this is what the big book says. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. See, self-seeking isn't there anymore. These are our main defects of character. We watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear. Number 2, when these crop up, we ask at once to remove them. Step number 3, we discuss them with somebody immediately. I'm going to talk about that. Step number 4, we make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. 5, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we could help. See, that's a fantastic way to do things, but what a lot of people won't do is they won't tell somebody, and we need to tell somebody. We need to do what step 10 tells us, is we need to tell somebody immediately. Then we make amends quickly, and then we resolutely turn our thoughts how I can help out others. That's step 10. What else is the Army? They have a code in the Army. Be all you can be. Well, we have a code of our own, and does anybody know it? Love and tolerance of others is our code. That's our code. Am I supposed to love you? Absolutely, I'm supposed to love you. Love and tolerance of others is our code. We're supposed to love everyone. That's our code. We got to live this. Page 84. We have to cease fighting everything in this, anything or anyone, even alcohol. Page 84. By this time, sanity will have returned. Oh, the sanity. Remember, we know what the insanity is. The idea. We don't have to worry about that now because now I'm thinking about others. Okay, page 85. We will see how our attitude towards liquor has been given us without thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's a miracle of it. Page 85. We're nor cocky nor afraid. That's our experience. This is how we react as long as we keep spiritual condition. Page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol, drugs, is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. Page 85. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all these activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun a sense of flow of His Spirit into us. Okay, we get to step 11. And it's not going to take long. Okay, step 11. Okay, it says step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying for, only knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And how I have it here, this is my own stuff. Prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening. And that's not in the big book, but that's what I really need to do, is I really need to listen to what God's telling me. And at this point, I want to, because I want to be a maximum helpfulness to others. So we know step 11, there's two parts of step 11. There's on the awakening and there's when I retire at night. And what's more important? Don't you answer. Don't you guys answer. What's more important? On the awakening or when I retire at night? What's more important? What? I know they're both, but is one more important than the other? Because I think there is. No. And I'm going to tell you why. It's when I retire at night. And I'm going to tell you why. Is on the awakening sets off a fantastic, wonderful way to live life. And I can even read it to you. Just wait. Let's see how long it is. Okay, but do you guys know it? So it's on the awakening, and we talk about, let's look at the 24 hours ahead, and you know, it's fantastic and it's wonderful, but I don't know how important you guys know that it is to do when I retire at night. And I'm going to tell you why I think it's a lot more important, is because there's 9 questions to answer every night, and this keeps me on track. So anybody I want who has done this work, and if you want to pick up your socks, I tell them, do step 11, answer the questions, when I retire at night, and answer these 9 questions. And here's the 9 questions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Excuse me. Number 1, it doesn't say 1, but here's the 9 things. 1, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? That's 1 question. Here's the 2nd question. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? What could have we done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others or what could we pack into the stream of life? But we are careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for we would diminish our usefulness to others. After making a review of God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken, that's the 9 questions. And it's so important to get back on track and to answer those 9 questions at night and to deal with that the next day. Then on the awakening, we read, you know, on the awakeness, let's look at the 24 hours ahead. And we pretty much know that it talks about, here we ask God for inspiration. By the time we get to step 11, they're telling you that God gave you a brain to use, and we want you to use it, but we want you to use it to help others, not you, right? Like, you should help you, but it's not about you anymore. You know, it's not about me anymore. It's about you. It's about being a better person in life. It's about being a better friend. It's about being a better girlfriend, boyfriend. It's about being a better person to every single person every single day. Step 11 gives me that. So then we get to step 12, and I don't even have to step 12. Oh, yeah, this is the only thing I want to say about step 12. Is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Okay, and what I want to say about this, and I have one thing highlighted in step 12. I have one thing highlighted, and this is what I have highlighted. And I hope you all will listen, and I hope you all will and grab this. Oh, look at that. 1 hour and 56 minutes. So I've nearly made it to 2 hours. Page 95, when it comes to step 12, and this is really important. Never talk down to an alcoholic or addict from any moral or spiritual hilltop. That's all I need to say, is we never put down the alcoholic or the addict. We're here to walk with you. We're here to love you. We're here to walk with you. And no one deserves to be talked to like, oh, I have more years than you, or I have more days than you. If you're not treated with love and respect, hang out with people that love you. And that's one of my favorite sayings in the fellowship, is you hang out with people that love you, and they show you that by their actions. What I tell a lot of people, too, is, oh, here's another thing in step 12, is Helping others is a foundation stone of our recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You know, and it goes on to just wonderful things. So our rule is never to avoid a place where there is drinking if we have a legitimate reason for being there. And step 12 has to do with giving this work to other people. I've walked with people for years and years in this fellowship. And nothing has worked better, I find, is by taking people through the 12 steps. And that's how I can help others today. And you know, I do the utmost to help as many people as I can, you know, in a day. You know, and through doing this work, it's completely changed my life. And you know what? I hope it can change your life too. And it's not that hard. It's about going with your heart. It's about reacting with love. And it's about helping others. Thanks for my clean time.